good food, good medical care, and be able to get industrial goods that they needed from the industrialized portions of the world, our will, even if we wanted to. If things happen in that context, we'll have bought the farm. If, on the other hand, when the disasters come, they come in a context of everybody in the world going all out, full scale, to help everybody else, then I think it's quite possible we get through it without that kind of trouble. It would be silly for a country that knew that everybody was doing everything they could to help it to threaten the people who were helping them. I mean, that would be, you know, just stupid. All right, now, you're all sitting there saying, God, that is the most asinine thing I've ever heard. How, you know, how silly can you get? That's unrealistic. Nobody will ever do anything like that. That guy's extremely naive, and on and on. Well, it's all quite true. If you asked me what I thought the chances are that we could get through the next 30 years without an end to civilization, I would tell you that the chances are 50-50 that we could. If you ask me what the chances are that we would, I'd have to go down and say, well, our chances are maybe 2% that we will, because, of course, the question is, will we do it? Not can we so much as will we really make the changes in our reproductive habits, in our attitudes towards other human beings on the face of the earth, in our economic attitudes and so on? And I think any intelligent human being would have to be very silly to be optimistic about whether we'll do that. We're really at an interesting juncture in the history of mankind. For the very first time, the only solutions that are left that are realistic are the kind that people used to call Christian or utopian or idealistic. So finally, our job now is to see whether or not we can finally come up as human beings and do something that is really idealistic. And most of you are young people, and I think fundamentally the job is going to be up to you, and I wish you lots of luck. Thank you. The question was, what kind of positive response have I had across the nation in the years of going on this routine? Well, let me say that I've been very cheered, particularly recently. The amount of flack has died away to virtually zero. I would say that one of the things about this problem, and one of the things that's going to keep it from becoming a fad, of course, is that the stimulus is going to remain and get worse until we really do something about it. So I've been very encouraged by reaction among students. For instance, there's an organization. Now, to give you an example of how rapidly things can change, there's an organization that many of you may know of called Zero Population Growth, ZPG. If any of you are interested in joining, it's just write to Los Altos, L-O-S-A-L-T-O-S, two words, California 94022. It's a political action organization designed sort of the same sort of thing as Friends of the Earth, designed to get the population growth stopped and the environment cleaned up by, among other things, supporting candidates and working against candidates. And I'd say that ZPG is the only organization in the country that is growing more rapidly than the situation is deteriorating. In October 69, there were something like 10 chapters and 16,000 members in the government. Every good guy I know in the House says that 5,000 young people working 2 hours a day for 3 months before election can elect anybody they want to the House of Representatives in the United States. In other words, I think you should not be discouraged about what can be done with political action. I don't want to give you any pros or cons on the McCarthy campaign because that isn't the point I want to make, but just remember, the McCarthy business was not a thing that illustrated it's impossible to beat the system. That was a pickup thing that started just really a few months before the action, and it almost made it. Now, if after the 1970 elections, a campaign can start to be see to it that we have a president by 1972 and so on, that's 2 years. You can do an awful lot in that time, so I don't be discouraged about political action. We haven't got time to tear down the system with a revolution and then hope that whatever comes up afterwards will be better. A, if you look at history, very rarely is what comes up afterwards any better. And B, we can't destroy our ability to help other people. We've got to do it by bending our system. So I'm encouraged, but I wish things were moving a lot faster. If we just eliminated unwanted births in the United States, we would be able to bring our population growth rate to zero. Well, there are two questions involved, zero and zero when. Estimates vary all over the map as to how many births in the United States are actually unwanted births. The highest estimates would give you very close to stability eventually. In other words, if the estimates of how many births are unwanted at the high end were right, sometime around 2060 or something, you would reach stability. If they're on the low end, it would do some good, but no good, but not enough good. Now, as far as that goes, I think it's a very socially desirable thing that no child be brought into this world that's unwanted. I think that's a very, very good idea socially. But if you look at the world situation as a whole, it's quite clear that the primary problem, the world situation, not necessarily the United States, it's unclear there, the primary problem is too many wanted children. You've got to remember that people have always more or less determined the number of children they have. In other words, in the world today, abortion is the commonest method of birth control. In countries where contraceptives are banned, the birth rates tend to be just about the same as with countries where contraceptives are not banned in similar economic situations. For instance, Italy maintains its relatively low birth rate with an abortion rate running almost 1 million a year. In Latin American countries, where contraception isn't available, women often move from quack contraception to quack abortion to frigidity and finally to infanticide and to suicide in order to keep their family sizes roughly where they want them. In this country, we have a considerable level of infanticide. It's called the battered baby syndrome. As you may know, infanticide was institutionalized in Great Britain about 150 years ago. In other words, it's not people do something about the size family they want, and although they do have more children than they want very often, most of the children in the world are wanted children, and that's why we've got to change the attitude. That's why we make the distinction between family planning and population control. Family planning is the idea that you don't have more children than you want, or you have the number of children you want, and obviously that's a good idea. Population control adds to it the other stipulation. You don't have more children than will produce a population size that your society can support. In other words, you got to think about your children, too. In other words, you say, oh, gee, well, I want to have 10 children. Well, when you say, I want to have 10 children, what you're saying today is, and this is nothing, you know, this is something that's really fairly new in the last 10 or 15 years, what you're saying today is, I want the pleasure of bearing and rearing 10 children, and I don't give a damn what kind of world they live in or whether they have a chance to have any children at all. You've got to think of the quality of life that your kid is going to lead. The question is, could a world government help everybody be more conscientious towards the will, since I do think a large element of the problem is the will? Well, I wish I could be more optimistic about whether or not we could get a world government, but I think it's obvious that some degree of giving up of sovereignty is going to be necessary to make a world government work, and we don't seem to be ready for that at the moment. The way I'd like to end run this is somewhat different. I think that we do need, obviously, we have to plan the entire world. In other words, this is one of the horrors of it. You know, we already have countries complaining about smog from other countries and so on. We have one huge system. Now, we've started work on a system to control the oceans. The oceans are a commons. Just like a common sheep pasture in many towns in Europe in the last century. When people deal with a commons, you always have a problem. Let's suppose you have a pasture, and you want to graze, it's a village pasture, and you want to graze your sheep on it. Now, for every individual, the best strategy seems to be to put all the sheep on you can possibly get your hand on. You get your biggest share of the pie that you can possibly get. The result, of course, is that more and more sheep are put on the pasture until the pasture is destroyed and you lose all your sheep. Well, we treat the oceans like a commons. It's a common dumping ground, and to our industry, the most profitable thing to do is dump all the pollution you can into the ocean. And for our fishing, our fishermen, the most profitable thing to do is grab every fish you can get. As a result, of course, we're overexploiting and polluting the sea, and we're about to lose it. Well, people now recognize this problem very clearly, and they're trying to set up an international organization, hopefully eventually with sanctions, that will control the sea, that will say, you know, a portion how much fish each country or each corporation can take out, control the amount of pollution that goes in, and so on. So you get a system which will hopefully control the sea. Now, it's just a very easy step from that to see, and people will see it, that what happens in the sea depends on what happens on the land. That's where the pollution comes from, for instance. And what happens in the sea and what happens to everybody depends on what happens to the atmosphere. It's another commons that's used both as a dumping ground and as a resource. We all take oxygen out of it. And eventually, I like to see this maneuver around so that we come around from behind and essentially take the spaceship concept, you see, that we have to control all the common systems of the planet. Once you get on there, you see, then you get rid of war very simply. Because once you get everybody thinking in terms of all these common systems, it will become apparent to anyone. If you're on a little spaceship and start throwing around hydrogen bombs, you're out of work. So I think that this is the way to approach it. I don't think we're going to have any more success with organizations like the UN at the present time than we've had so far, simply because if you just tell people we've got to all be governed by everybody, they won't see it. They've got to be brought to it.
This is WBAI, New York City.
I'm walking along 14th Street heading west in the block between 2nd and 3rd Avenue. And while there are no exhibits here, there is, because of the fact that the street is closed, a feeling of space which is normally absent here. People who are usually crowded into 15 feet of sidewalk now have the whole street to walk down, and people are having what seems to be a nice time. It's a question of observing the way they walk. There are more people sauntering today. The level of activity is higher, but the individual pace of activity is lower. There are two guys sitting on the curb talking, something which would otherwise be impossible because they'd have long since been squished by a bus. So while there are no booths over here, Earth Day is having an effect, and possibly a more direct effect, on the lives of people who live right near to this busy intersection.
Hey, Franny, how'd it go?
Right in front of the Con Edison building. There's a display from the Environmental Protection Agency's Department of Water Resources. Deals with sewage treatment. Let's listen to this.
Go back. In other words, it was going up until about 1932 or 27.
And then your population wasn't as great either.
To what extent does this treatment plant purify the water? The stuff that's finally pumped out, how clear is it?
Okay, this particular treatment plant is Tallman's Island. It's up around the Whitestone Bridge in the Queenside, and it removes somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 to 90% of the biological oxygen demand. And with chlorination, it removes a far greater amount of the pathogenic organisms and chloroform organisms.
Is this in operation now?
Yes, it is. This plant was built in 1939. It's been upgraded a number of times since then.
Could I swim in the water that comes out of this plant?
When it's being chlorinated, believe it or not, when it's being chlorinated, you could.
Or you what would happen to me? Nothing would happen.
Okay, no.
In other words,
the way that they, I wouldn't want to swim. Believe me, the way that they judge whether you can swim in water or not is strictly, is strictly on a bacteriological count. Okay, how many bacteria there are in a milliliter of water.
As of right now, what percentage of the city's waste water is treated?
Okay, there's 1.8 billion gallons of sewage being generated in New York City.
That's sanitary or storm or both?
That's sanitary.
That's a day.
Okay.
That's a day. Billion gallons a day. Right now, 1.3 billion gallons per day are being treated.
To what extent?
80%.
Okay, it's a varying percent. About, I think the overall average removal of sewage that is treated is probably in the neighborhood of 70 to 75%, let's say.
So then some of the treatment plants are pretty old and they're really not doing an awful lot, right?
No,
if this one does 80 and the average is 70, then there must be some that are way below.
There are a number
90,
that are pulling
it to about 60. But they're
That's
being upgraded.
Right. They are being upgraded. There are things being done to increase the efficiency of the.
Now I'm walking along 14th Street and I've almost reached the corner of Union Square. The biggest line on this block at this point is waiting to get into Luchow's to have some dinner. There are some across the street from Luchow's on the north side, there are some earring salesmen. Here's a group that it's called Citizens for a Quieter City. Maybe I can talk with them.
He's up in Columbia speaking now.
Hi, I'm from WBAI Radio.
Hi.
How's the noise going?
No, there's plenty of noise.
What What can we do about it? What are you telling people to do about it?
Just what I ask her, right?
Well, my organization is Citizens for a Quieter New York. And what we do is we try to influence legislation for more quiet sanitation trucks, traffic control, garbage truck, garbage can control, and so on. And what you can do is to join us, send us your name, let us use your name in advertising so that we can let the legislators know that there are many people involved.
Do you think that an issue such as noise pollution, in light of the apathy of elected officials on things which at least are more dramatic, if not more pressing, I think an issue like noise pollution stands a chance? I mean, if I give you my name and let you use it in an advertisement, it's fine with me, but that isn't going to do anything, it seems to me. Do you think it will?
Well, I think we're at the beginning of the fight to make people aware of just how destructive noise is. And right now, you're right, there isn't a lot of push behind it, but I think when people start to see the scientific studies that tell how we're bombarded 24 hours a day with noise that wreaks havoc with our mental health and our peace of mind and our physical systems, which are affected, I think then they'll begin to get behind us and to push for the same. They'll realize how dramatic it really is and how much we need the support.
Continuing along 14th Street towards Union Square, here's a man who says, if you don't want pollution in the region of your brain, you'll have to keep your bloodstream clean. Your brain washed with the same natural hygiene teaches how to keep your bloodstream clean. Read the books and paperbacks of natural hygiene. And he's selling a book called You Don't Have to Be Sick, another one called Health for Millions. So, I think I mentioned that there were earring salesmen and people putting together little crafted leather baskets and things on the other street corner. And there's a definite carnival kind of atmosphere here on 14th Street. A lot of young people coming by. Maybe I'll be bold and stop a couple of them. Excuse me, I'm from WBAI Radio, and you look like a likely person to ask why you're here on 14th Street.
Why am I here on 14th Street?
Sure.
Well, actually, I'm coming from a movie that was over on 12th Street, and I wanted to see what was happening and how they were cleaning the air and all that. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's neat that they can, you know, stop the traffic and all. I'm glad that it's happening. You know, I think that people should walk on the streets all the time.
Do you think that tomorrow it's going to make any difference?
Well, I think most people...
Well, will it make any difference to you, put it that way?
Will this have made any difference to me?
Right.
Well, it'll make me realize that even if people haven't been sincere about coming here, they've shown some signs of commitment by coming here, and all I can do is hope that, you know, people will think that coming here today has not solved the pollution problem. That they start thinking that the way they think that, you know, marching on November 15th is going to stop the war, then nothing's going to happen. I just hope that people will realize, you know, that this is supposed to be a beginning, not an end.
Thank you.
It's okay.
Let's see. We'll stop somebody else and ask them. Here's an eminently respectable gentleman in a coat and a tie. Excuse me, sir, I'm from a New York radio station. Could I ask you some questions?
Yes, please.
What attracted you to 14th Street today? Why'd you come down here?
Today, because I read in the paper there was a big happening here, and I was very surprised what happened here.
Are you visiting the United States?
Yes.
Where are you from?
Belgium, from Antwerp.
Is there as much concern in Belgium about pollution and the environment as there is here?
We have a big problem too, but we don't do anything in Belgium.
Well, I'm not sure how much we do here. We certainly do a lot to pollute. I don't know if we do anything to fix it.
It's just the same in Belgium, but we never speak about pollution. I live in a very nice part of the town, but it's polluted by smoke and everything. It's awful in Belgium too.
Have you been able to get all around the street here and look at the various exhibits and things? What did you think of them?
Well, I must say the pollution has less importance as to be together, and you understand?
It's more of a carnival than anything
else.
Yes,
a little, yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. Are you having a nice time?
Very nice time here in New York. I like it very much.
Thank you.
Please, thank you.
And a visitor from Belgium, a highly industrial country. And I don't have to tell anybody that. Now I'm in the middle of Union Square and 14th Street. And there's a man talking about better transit. And let's see if we can hear what he's got to say.
No, that's not our program. Your program is to tax poor people and working people. Our program is to tax the banks, the landlords, and the big corporations in this city.
He's from the Council of Better Transit Organization.
No, the Council of Better Transit is a city organization which tries to shift the blame.
Council of Better Transit Organizations is a coalition of 9 transit user groups. The City Transportation Administration is the next group. They have the other sides.
Who are you from?
I'm a member of the Labor Committee, and I'm speaking for the Transit Coalition, which is a coalition of about 30 groups working for the 20-cent fare referendum.
And basically, what's your position? Explain it to me. I'm from WBAI Radio.
All right. Explain
it to me.
Our position is that we have the resources in the city to provide decent transit system and to, as well as clean up the environment and put people to work to build houses and schools and as well as subways. The money is here. It's in business income. And the average person in the city will not support any kind of schemes by the mayor or anybody else to do anything to fix up this city if it's going to mean cutting down their income or if it's going to mean deducting money from schools or welfare or deducting money from hospitals. That's not the way. We got to build up the city. We got to do it at the expense of corporate income, at the expense of landlords' income. We got to tax them in such a way that they can't pass the taxes on.
Just navigated past the Italian Iceman. And I'm turning north on Union Square East, which is the extension of 4th Avenue. And going to see what's going on up here. Here's a battery-operated car, which has a trunk full of batteries. 10 batteries in the trunk. And I saw one of these before, which they couldn't start. It was sitting on the far side of the street. And
do you really use this one?
Yeah, every day.
Would you clean out the back and take us for a drive?
Fine.
Would you clean out the back and take us
for a
test drive? On 14th Street.
Excuse me. Can you tell me about the car? Excuse me? How much, suppose I wanted to buy one, what would it cost?
I would say it would cost about $3,000.
Maybe over.
A little bit over.
Yeah.
$3,000. And how much would it cost me to charge the batteries in terms of electricity? Let's say I drove it 50 miles a day. How much would it cost me
really
to charge
it? I don't
know.
I couldn't answer that question.
How fast does it go?
60 miles an hour.
And what's its range?
100 miles.
Can I buy this anywhere? Suppose I decided that I wanted to buy it. Could I actually purchase it?
It's not on the market, sir, no.
Who made it?
Edison made his car.
Con Edison?
Con Edison, right.
Is there any possibility that it's going to be on the market?
Well, we hope so.
Who's we?
Well, you and me and everybody.
But what about Con Edison? Do they hope so?
Well, why not? It helps the air pollution.
Well, there's a lot of other things that help the air pollution that they don't seem to hope for. I'm just wondering if they're behind it or if it's just sort of sitting here because it, you know, it's an interesting idea.
Okay, this guy's been a demonstrating model for about more than a year. Is that a model? Excuse me.
How long was they demonstrating? For about a year?
Maybe over a year.
Over a year.
Is there any prospect that Con Edison will convert any of its own trucks to electric power? If this car has a radius of 100 miles and goes 60 miles an hour, Con Ed could use it in the city and therefore immediately reduce all that pollution.
I don't see why not, and I hope that in the future all the cars and the buses in the city would be converted into electric or gas driven motors.
But Con Ed isn't about to do it now, are they?
Well, I don't see how they could do it if
I mean the company trucks.
They do gradually. We do have quite a few natural gas.
Yeah, but this is an operating vehicle that Con Ed could use for its maintenance trucks. I don't know how many thousand
really
of them they have.
Not really maintenance for the mail run, passenger and executive run.
Well, then why don't they?
They do.
I thought this, how many of these are there being used by Con Ed?
No, we have two electric.
Well, what about all the others?
Well, you go up to quite a few thousand pieces of equipment now.
Yeah, but if it really will save pollution and it isn't terribly expensive, only $3,000, it seemed to me to be a good idea.
Yes, but don't forget it's only an experimental.
Ah, so isn't proven yet.
Yeah, but no, we do have an electric bus that maintains a regular schedule, shuttle from 44th to 14th Street, 11-passenger electric bus. That's been in use for over a year and a half.
So why couldn't the company, say, convert a couple of thousand of its maintenance trucks to that kind of a system?
No, we do try to convert some of them now. In fact, we have one in operation right now, and they're talking about it to get a few more converted to natural gas. You can just go and buy a whole fleet. It's up to the manufacturer who built these cars, too.
Don't you think it's up to the president of the corporation, Mr. Luce, to say, let's buy 1,000 of these? If they work, let's buy them?
Well, that's what he's doing. He's buying some now. He has some in order.
Three?
Well, I don't know how many.
Okay, thank you. Well, there was a somewhat circular conversation with a representative of Consolidated Edison, which is presenting an electric car here. It's 25 after 5 or so, and there are fewer people here now than there were throughout the day. I would say that wandering around in the 4 or 5 block square area, which is Union Square and Klein's and 14th Street and 14th Street, I said 14th Street, didn't I? Well, wandering around in that area, there are probably 10 or 12,000 people right now. I think at the height of the day, there were probably 25 or 30,000. So, I'm walking north on Union Square West, which is the extension of Park Avenue, and next time I come to something interesting, I'll turn my machine back on. I was about to go into the American Institute of Architects booth and cause some trouble there. Now going by is a group of people saying pollution sucks, and they're carrying a gas mask on a plastic thing made to hold wigs and holding daffodils, and it's a train of about 100 or 150 people. Well, I'm not going to, as I say, try to talk to somebody from the American Institute of Architects. I'm from a local radio station. Are you part of the display here?
Yes, I am.
Let me ask you, it appears to me, looking around Midtown Manhattan, and I'm not an architect, but just observing the scene, that it's possible to get an architect to design almost any project. If someone could come along and design a 40-story tower for above Grand Central Terminal, it appears to me you can get somebody to design anything.
That's
now,
true.
What I'm wondering is, what is the AIA doing, or what are the prospects from the viewpoint of a member of the AIA for restraint on the part of architects, for architects saying, no, we're not going to do that particular project, turning down clients and so on and so forth?
Oh, well, the architects ordinarily wouldn't turn down a client if he was reasonable and there was some project to be done, unless there was some anti-social reason.
Well, suppose I came along and said I want to rip down five old townhouses on Fifth Avenue and put up a 40-story aluminum box apartment structure.
Well,
now, I'm sure I could find an architect to design that for me.
The most conscientious architects would not do this for you. The AIA, as a matter of policy, would seek to preserve the best of its historic monuments. Would you find an architect who, for money, would do this? You probably would.
Well, then, what are the prospects for turning America's urban landscape into something more than a series of... There are many fine buildings in New York, but there are also many buildings which are very mundane and probably are too big for the sites and contribute basically more people to already congested areas, and they're built by builders who are interested in the money and architects who are interested in designing a large building.